Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am Dave Smith. He is the king of the caulks, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother?
Nothing much. How's the weekend, Davey Smith?
Very good, very good. Can't complain. I recorded an episode last night with Scott Horton, but I think we're going to put that one out first. So maybe this is the bonus episode. I don't know. One of them's a bonus episode. They're all bonus episodes. You guys should just be... Should just take every episode as a bonus that was unexpected. But besides that, just hung out with the family and stuff and had a good time. How about you?
Nice. I filmed, back in the apartment. Right when you start, the entire street game
literally, it was
come
your
out.
First words. It was go, fine go, until you spoke.
They're out there solving crimes. No, I filmed a sketch on Saturday. I think it's going to come out really excellent. I had my sister's wedding yesterday, so I had a fun-filled wedding weekend of stuff. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's very nice. Your sister? I thought she was already married with kids.
I got a younger one, too. I got all sorts of sisters. They're out there.
Okay. Oh, all right. There you go. Okay. Well, that's good for you. Younger sister married. Get your shit together, Rob. What's going on here?
Yeah, definitely had that vibe all day. Young man, why?
Oh, dude, having your younger sister get married at a Jewish wedding and just being there unmarried. Oh, you're just going to get a whole lot of that. Yeah, I'm sure. Oh, whatever. Your life choices, bro.
That's right.
I support you. Me and you got some fun stuff coming up.
Hell yeah. August 8th.
August 8th, Washington, D.C., live stand-up show, live podcast. We'll put the ticket links in the description. They're going fast, so if you want to come out, get them now because there's not too many seats left. And then we got there are some seats left for Rochester, New York, at the end of the month. So also, go buy those. Let's fill that bitch up. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to all that stuff. All right. And then you got you're in
Nashville. Nashville on the 14th. Hit me up.
You're in Nashville. There we go. It's a great city. Nashville's a really cool fucking city, man. Like one of the coolest cities in the country, for sure. Okay. So, few different things that I wanted to talk about for today that caught my eye. First off, I wanted to mention this thing about Kamala Harris's approval rating, which is trending, and a whole lot of, a whole lot of the conservatives are pouncing on it, you know, for obvious political reasons. There's a couple polls that came out. I have Kamala Harris's approval ratings very bad, like amongst the worst approval ratings for vice presidents in modern American history. Not exactly the worst, I don't think, but this is as some headlines were saying. But regardless, they're bad. I mean, really not good. Very high. I think I believe her unfavorable or unfavorability rate, percentage was the highest, but her approval was, you know, like amongst the lowest, not the exact
lowest. Which should surprise nobody.
Yeah. Well, it is something, but aside from just the kind of like what I've heard a lot from, you know, or seen a lot from conservatives on Twitter and stuff like that, just being like, ha ha, yeah, she sucks, you know, and kind of, you know, a lot of this stuff that they do that actually just infuriates me that people do for every president that somebody likes, whether Democrat or Republican, they always have some list that they rattle off of the accomplishments of the president. You know, the Democrats on cable news or something like that will always be like, Obama, historic health care reform, blah, 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 you know, this and that, the pulled us out of the Great Recession, blah, blah, blah. They always have like a list. And then the Trump people would always have the same things. And, you know, it's like the peace deals and the trade deals and the this and that and the job growth and blah, blah, blah. You know, like they always have their things. And if you really look into it, it's usually kind of all bullshit, you know? And so there's a lot of this going around. It's like, well, of course she has a low approval rating. I mean, look at COVID's back and this and that and all these other things. And half of them really have nothing to do with anything Kamala Harris has done. Like, I always find it kind of silly to blame like Biden for COVID being back, like as if Trump being in there would have kept the Delta variant at bay or something. Like, it's just all silly. And look, obviously his economic policies have been terrible, and he has some responsibility for the inflation and stuff like that. But it is pretty rich listening to some of these Trump supporters, you know, denounce Biden for his inflationary policies, when you're like, yeah, you know, a lot of this is a result of the year 2020. So let's not kid ourselves. No matter who, Donald Trump could have won 49 states and been reelected, and the economy this year was not going to look good. That's just the reality of the situation. You can't do what you did in 2020 and think 2021 is going to be some easy year for most people in this country. But what is really interesting about Kamala Harris's approval ratings being so low is that I just do not see a way that Joe Biden is seeking re-election. I just find this to be very unlikely. I don't think Joe Biden is slowing down by the hour. The idea that he's going to get to 2024 and be ready to go and actually have to campaign this time, I'm not saying it's impossible. I see it as highly unlikely, highly unlikely. And now, because of the situation of the way things are set up, the Democrats are locked in to Kamala Harris. If it's not Biden, it has to be Kamala Harris. There's no way they can skip over the first, you know, woman of color vice president ever and not try to have her run. It's hers, just by the tradition in politics. It's her nomination if she wants it. And it's not as if they have like some type of deep bench or anything like that. I mean, I really don't see anyone else being able to step in there and say, no, not our vice president. If you were to do that, you would have to be like disavowing the, you know, I mean, the only way it could happen is if there was a Trump type figure who said, you know, yeah, this presidency was a disaster. And I don't see that happening in the Democratic field. So Kamala Harris is probably going to be the Democratic nominee. And the fact that she is one of the most unpopular vice presidents in modern history, that really means something. It's you know, people were comparing her approval ratings to Mike Pence's approval ratings, but no one thought Mike Pence was going to run for re-election in 2020 or was going to run for president in 2020. So that didn't really matter so much. This actually is much more relevant because Biden is substantially older than Trump was in his first term. Maybe not substantially, he's older, and in terms of his true age, he's substantially older. So this is...
Hasn't been eating enough mayonnaise and fast foods. All those preservatives keep you young.
Donald Trump is a freak of nature, man. I don't know how the hell he does it. He's old and fat, but he's got the energy of the gods.
Sudafed.
Yeah, maybe
that's... You and I are doing the wrong drugs.
That's for sure. But so I was looking at this and I was going, man, this is something important. I mean, this is like a huge opening for the Republicans. And this is more than just your average, oh, the vice president isn't popular.
Well, I think with popular, I mean, they tried to like goof us into liking some of these people before. So The idea that CNN wouldn't roll out with the whole, hey, first black lady, amazing moment for our country, and look at her track record. They will roll the propaganda machine, but behind closed doors, they're not dumbasses. They must look at some numbers and go, this won't work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is a fair point. They certainly will roll that out for her, but I just have very little confidence that that's going to do it. I mean, okay, I understand she's a black woman, or, you know, whatever she is, Jamaican Indian woman. She doesn't have skin, you know, and so she's a person of color, according to the corporate press. That, you know, categorization that means not white.
Or maybe here's what
Clinton was a woman, and they used all of this historic language about her, and it just that really didn't move the needle enough for her.
Maybe here's what goes down: Biden dies like in, you know, 10 minutes from now. And then they put Kamala in, and then they let the whole system unravel, and then everyone gets really upset with government, and then they tell us that we're just upset with government because we're racist. It's not because of the inflation, and it's not because of anything else. It's just because it's so ingrained in us to hate women and blacks. So this is like a double problem for everybody, and that's really what our issue is. So just be poor gracefully, don't have money for food, and don't blame black minorities for it.
It's not beyond the scope of what they could potentially do. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
I mean, but they're pushing vaccines on kids. So, you know, how much further are they going to push this?
Right. And they're pushing the, you know, racialist shit on everyone. So I guess, you know, it is kind of interesting that, you know, Biden chose Kamala Harris to begin with when there were some pretty obvious signs that she was not a popular candidate in the primary, you know, like her campaign and the results of it. It's also, you know, some people were saying that part of the reason why she has her popularity is so low is because Biden has given her these very difficult tasks, you know, putting her in the immigration stuff and voter fraud and like these things.
Just tasks, what the job is. If you wanted to prove, hey, I can handle the important things, you would go do it.
As much as I would kind of like to believe that on some level there's like Joe Biden is getting back at her for calling him racist on the debate stage, which is not impossible. I mean, these are human beings after all, and I wouldn't be surprised. And also, you got to think, like, who knows? There we go. Oh, that's Biden. And you got to think, like, who knows how influential Biden's wife is, or, you know, like people like that around. There might be someone around Biden who like really took it personally that she would on national television call him a bigot and probably really doesn't like, I could see that on a human level really bothering someone, especially for someone like Joe Biden, whose great achievement at the time was being vice president to the first black president ever, kind of felt like he has this kind of like, you know, street cred in the black community, and that she really viciously kind of tried to undermine that. It's possible. But I don't really think any of that has anything to do with her approval ratings being low. I really think it's just that people don't like her. I think it's that simple, that she's just really has like zero charisma and does not. She has the Hillary Clinton illness. She is not good at convincing other human beings that she is one of them, that she is also a human being.
I think the deep state must just give you too much of a false sense of confidence that you're untouchable and that what you say is the rule of law. And so they just get sucked into that.
Well, what's interesting about that, right, is that so many of these kind of, you know, deep state establishment supported candidates in the past have enjoyed better, you know, approval ratings than her. I was reading earlier, Dan Quayle had a higher approval rating than her. And he was kind of like viewed as a joke and, you know, couldn't spell potato and all that shit.
Potato is a tough word. I can have a problem with that. That E comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's true. It's a tricky word. But I also think that what's going on here is just that, like, the failures of government are more apparent than ever before, that the trust in the corporate press is lower than ever before, and the access to alternative points of view is way higher than ever before. And so I just think that it's just much harder for the corporate press to walk their preferred candidate over the finish line. That's like, I really think that's the story of what's going on here. And so I think it's just going to be very challenging for them. So anyway, this just, you know, this throws a lot of things into question. Now, is, like, you know, I just on its face, I kind of said originally, I don't think Donald Trump is going to be president again, because it just seems so ridiculous, right? Like, I'm trying to fix this thing as I see it all messed up in the screen. If you look at it and you're like, well, he's like old and fat, and 2020 was the most disastrous year in modern American history. And what are the odds? And he's kicked off Twitter and Facebook. He doesn't have the access to the platform that he used to have. Just doesn't seem practical. But now I'm looking at it and you're like, well, I mean, look, if he really wants to do this, like if his ego is telling him I'm going to do this, he's probably going to do it, right? Like he's probably going to do. And could anyone really beat Donald Trump in a Republican primary? Is that real? Like, how likely is that? And then if he wins the primary, he's probably got a one-on-one versus Kamala Harris.
In my estimations, first is it came out today, Trump is record fundraising for someone who recently is not currently running for president. It's insane how much money he's raising, especially if you consider the fact that he's not on any social media platforms. I also think that even though Trump was not a very good president, people are kind of if you're not on the left and you see the authoritarian and everything that's going on in the world, you're like, fucking get Trump back. Like, just somehow combat the craziness that I'm seeing, please. With that being said, I do think DeSantis might have a possibility of beating him. It depends on where Florida is in 2 years from, or a year and a half, 2 years from now. If Florida's absolutely kicking ass, I think that guy's got a chance. And I would be pretty surprised if they ended up running Kamala. Like, it's just every story out of the White House has been about, like, her own staff was saying that they don't get along with her and she's difficult to work with. They had to do damage control on that. We saw her at the debates. Like, they're not going to just want to lose. If anything, really Elizabeth Warren will be like, fuck you, I'm a female and I'm better. And I mean, she's not, but that's what it's going to take, is another female in the party just being like, fuck you.
Well, to your point about DeSantis, you know, we're going to talk about him a little bit later in the show if we have time to get to that. I'd say personally, I really don't want him going anywhere. I want him to be governor. I really want all of the governors who were good on COVID to remain governors until I think the threat of COVID lockdowns are gone. That's just my personal opinion on it. And I don't know. I mean, who knows what the world will look like by 2024. Hopefully this is all gone and not an issue anymore, but I'm not convinced that it will be. And as of right now, governors actually have a lot of power in what they can do under the COVID regime. And I'm pretty confident that, like, COVID passports and stuff like that will be fought in Florida if they're trying, you know what I mean? And like, that's really important right now. So I'll say this. Look, he's got just viewing it, like, just analyzing the politics of the whole thing, I think he's got an incredibly strong case to run on, right? That, like, look, when the biggest test came, he did really, really good. And there's really not too many people who did really, really good. Like, Kristi Noem in South Dakota. But South Dakota is, like, a very low population state, and it's kind of a little bit different and not as big of a state, you know? And to jump from that to president is a lot different than the governor of Florida. And then I guess what's his name? Abbott in Texas did good eventually, but DeSantis did a lot better than him. And so, yeah, there's a real strong argument to be made there for him. However, realistically, if Trump wants it, can he beat Trump in a Republican primary? I gotta say, the odds are probably against that. The odds are against that. Trump is very popular with the Republicans still. He can kind of run with all of this. You know, it's like one of these things, like, just like in 2016, it was like the more the corporate press attacked Donald Trump, the more, like, momentum it gave him. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I remember trying to explain this to, like, Essie Cupp when I was on her show. And I don't even know why I was giving her advice, but it was just, like, impossible not to. Like, it's impossible to, like, sit in a green room with her and not be like, hey, like, you realize, like, if you really hate Donald Trump, like, this is his strength. Like, you are his best advocate. Because the more you guys attack him, the more he can turn around to his people and say, see? I mean, obviously, I'm a real threat to them. Obviously, this whole thing is rigged against me. And why is it rigged against me? Because it's rigged against you. And I represent you. Like, it just kind of solidified his point of view. I also thought, by the way, that was, like, one of the things that people never get, or I guess they choose not to get. But it was also one of the things, like, when I would talk to, like, alt-right guys or, like, on the podcast, and people would be like, why aren't you more outraged? Like, why aren't you screaming racist at them? And you're like, because you guys realize that just gives them strength, right? Like, that's their power source. Is that they come out and present these ideas, and then everyone goes, you're not allowed to present those ideas. Get out of here. And then they're able to go, like, see, no one can combat our ideas. They're just freaked out by them. And it, to their own base, it proves their point. So Trump now he can say he was robbed in the election, that they had to lock down economies in order to get him out of there, that they had to overhaul the way people were voting in order to get him out of there. He can say that Twitter had to ban him and Facebook had to ban him, and why is all that? Because he was just fighting for you. And anyway, there's a real story there that I think Donald Trump is crafty enough to take advantage of. And so anyway, I'm just looking at this and I go, oh, wow. I mean, we might be looking at Trump versus Harris, in which case Trump would have to be, I would think, would have to be the favorite.
Unless they're that good at rigging elections that even Kamala somehow comes out ahead.
It's possible.
The other thing to note, though, is they're doing a pretty good job of aggressively going after Trump. I think it was the old like CFO or some sort of financial head of the Trump organization was arrested.
Yeah.
Someone from 4 years ago. I didn't even catch the story, but the same bullshit that they got. I think it's the same bullshit they got Flynn on, which they've never prosecuted anybody on, which is like the foreign dignitary, whatever, just something that's on the books.
Didn't register in the right way.
And by the way, it sucks so much to get busted after Trump's out of office and you can't get your pardon. So that guy's in trouble. And this one you got to check, but I think I saw a headline that the AG said that Congress can see Trump's tax returns. Now, as to what time, but all I'm saying is the legal system's working against this guy as aggressively as it would appear that they can. So it might be interesting if they actually chase him out of the game, or if he ends up with some sort of an actual legal problem.
Isn't it interesting, right, that there's almost always been this unwritten agreement that you don't go after former presidents for their crimes? I mean, even Nixon, they didn't go after for anything. They didn't go after George W. Bush for any of his crimes. None of them. They just let him go. But Trump, and I think it has to do with what I'm saying here, that I think they realize, like, oh, shit, this is actually not only is it not outside of the realm of possibilities, there's actually a fairly high likelihood that this could end up happening. Anyway, if it is Trump versus Kamala Harris in 2024, wouldn't it be an interesting time to have a really great third party candidate talking some real hardcore liberty shit? Just saying, whoever that could be.
It'd be hard to ignore a third party candidate in a Trump versus Kamala race.
Sure would.
That sure seems like a market where people would be like, anything else.
It's a real opportunity for a third party candidate to get up there and say, listen, you have to be anti-racist. Black Lives Matter. Real big opportunity for that. So hopefully we use it in the right way. Okay. So was there anything else I want to say on that? No, I think that was more or less my thoughts on that. Okay. So you sent me this video that I had not seen of Sarah Silverman. That I thought this was really interesting. I thought we might play this on the show and kind of respond to it. I think we did one of her videos once before and went through it. Look, Sarah Silverman, as I always have to preface with, I always really loved. I grew up on her comedy. I always thought she was so funny. And it's interesting, I guess, for me, like, I'm a stand-up comedian who likes to do these podcasts and talk about serious things and kind of tackle, you know, issues in our society. And so it's interesting to see another comedian who I used to look up to very much, who's kind of doing the same thing. But here was Sarah Silverman. I guess she posted this to her Instagram. And here was her talking about her thoughts on vaccinated and unvaccinated people.
It's interesting seeing all these people on the right now saying to get the vaccine, too, you know, because what did they realize? They're actually losing their audience and their voters to actual death. Now they want them to get vaccinated. It's scary because it isn't just unvaccinated people.
Can you pause for a second?
It is just.
Firstly, kind of not the worst joke. That's kind of silly and funny. But if you look at the records, I don't think right wing people are dying off in droves. If she's saying that as a joke, it's kind of funny enough as a joke. But as the rest of the rant kind of goes, it does seem like she's not really in joke territory. And that she does honestly believe that in some ways the Republicans are losing their audience by anti-vax talk. And I'm going to venture to say that that's inaccurate. I think the Republicans will actually draw more of an audience by talking to freedom and the ridiculousness of what the government's done to us and listening to lying Fauci.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, again, it's hard to know exactly how to measure this, but if you measure by people's their votes with their feet, there's certainly been a lot more people moving to Florida and Texas than there have been moving to L.A. and New York over the last year. But aside from that, I mean, I don't know who's died more. I mean, look, overall, this has nothing to do with vaccines, I suppose, because it was before they were available. But overall, blue states were amongst the states that got hit the hardest, right? Like, I mean, New York and New Jersey. But you could also say that the virus, like the people who die from it, skew very old. So it is possible that they have lost more right-wingers or left-wingers. But the idea that, like, all of a sudden right-wingers are telling their people to get vaccinated because they're just dropping like flies, I don't really think there's a lot of data to back that up, but whatever. That's kind of the least of my problems with this. But let's here, just take it back like a few seconds, and then let's keep playing.
It is just unvaccinated people who are dying from COVID. But because they're not getting vaccinated, all these mutations are happening, the variants are happening, and people that are vaccinated.
Okay, so let's pause it right here. It's unbelievable. And look, this is not a left-wing or a right-wing thing. This is a government thing. It's been done with left-wing and right-wing governments all throughout history. But the government will fuck people over and then convince them of some scapegoat as the reason why you're living in this awful situation. And in this case, it's become the unvaccinated. They're blamed for everything. Now, just to be clear here, when she says it is only the unvaccinated who are dying, that's just not true. That's just not true. There are vaccinated people who have died from COVID. Now, what exactly those numbers are, we were talking about on the last episode. What did you say, Rob? They said the official number that they're using is 95%.
Yeah, so I mean, here's the problem. First is they're only telling you a percentage, and they're not telling you age or risk category. So just a number, it doesn't help you. And the inaccuracy of the 95% number, which is a very good selling point. Hey, 95% of all hospitalizations and deaths are amongst the non-vaccinated. That would be a good number if you were telling me what was going on this month. You're telling me the information going back to January and February when no one was vaccinated. So obviously you're boosting your numbers. And then you also don't include people that have been recently vaccinated, which would be some sort of like a semi-category. The point being that lie is it's a piece of marketing material. It is not, if you were actually looking to get real information to make a good decision here, that is not the number to stand by.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
I think go for it.
And just one other point to that is that there are, and this reminds me just of like when you looked at, you know, when they would start after a while of us having these lockdowns, when you'd start looking at the numbers of lockdown states versus non-lockdown states and lockdown countries versus non-lockdown countries. And you know, what really starts to jump out on you is like, you're like, this pattern is not clear the way it should be. Right? Like, in order to justify lockdowns, you would think it would be obvious that there'd be a clear substantial benefit in the places that locked down, but you don't see that. And you see many of the places not locked down doing better than many of the places that did, and worse than some of the other places that did. It just almost seems like, but there's no clear pattern there. And if you look at some of the countries where they've had the highest vaccination rates, Israel being one, but there's several others, this has not prevented new outbreaks and new variants and things like that. So there have been deaths. Now, what exact percentage of the deaths there are, I guess we don't exactly know that. I'm willing to accept the possibility that the vaccine makes you less likely to die if you get it again. You'd also have to kind of compare that to what natural immunity does to you, which makes the whole conversation a lot tougher. But it is not true to just simply say the people who are vaccinated aren't dying. It's just not true. It's factually inaccurate. And to blame the variants on the unvaccinated is a very dubious scientific claim. The idea that we would not have variants if everyone had just gotten the vaccine. I don't think that's a solid assertion at all.
And to take a look at how not solid an assertion that is, first and foremost, I don't believe that this mutation took place in the U.S. From what I had heard, it was first spotted in India and then in the UK. So if we had our entire country vaccinated, the mutation still would have taken place in another country where they were not vaccinated. And then what we're seeing in our country is that people with the people who have been vaccinated can both get the Delta variant and they can spread it. Now, here is where that information gets a little bit interesting, is that they're saying that the people who have been vaccinated are not getting as sick. Now, firstly, if you're not even keeping records on people with the Delta variant getting sick, I mean, people who have been vaccinated getting the Delta variant getting sick, how exactly are you quantifying how sick? If a guy's at home and he's not calling you up to tell you, I was pretty sick, but I didn't give you a record of exactly how sick I was. So how are you quantifying that these people aren't that sick? And then they're saying, well, since they're not getting as sick, their shed rate wouldn't be as large. They wouldn't be spreading it as much. And I read this. This was a John Hopkins, the head of like their science program, said, well, the hope is not science. If you actually got a study to say that, hey, they're not shed, there's not as much shed rate, and so they're not spreading it as much, then you go, okay, you got some science there. But the hope is that the people that took the vaccine are not getting as sick, and when they are sick, there isn't as much shed, so they're not spreading it as much. That is not science. That is not evidence. That is nothing. You know what I hope? I hope that the vaccine gives up to, I mean, the virus gives up tomorrow and goes away. That's my hope.
Right, right. So there's, you know, and I remember when I would be making these arguments, one of the things that people would point out, like the supporters of the COVID regime, they would point out the counterfactual example, which is, you know, not completely unfair. I mean, so if you look at a place and you go, well, here's where they instituted mask mandates, and then the cases go up and up and up after that. And you could say, really doesn't seem like mask mandates did anything to slow down the cases. They can say, well, it could have been even worse if they didn't institute them, which, okay, to some degree is fair enough. But if you look at enough areas, you'd think there'd be some type of pattern of where, but okay, that's fine. You can play that game. But then if you're going to play that game with the counterfactuals, first of all, you'd have to give the same, benefit to the other side that, well, when they didn't have mask mandates and cases go up, well, we don't know if mask mandates would have done anything there, right? Unless you have some scientific reason to have this hypothesis that they would do something. But for, you know, again, even if someone's going to say, hey, I got the vaccine and I got COVID and had mild symptoms, I mean, okay, it's just like, then you can also play the counterfactual there. You don't know what it would have been like if you hadn't gotten the vaccine, and you just don't know exactly. Now, I don't know. There's people who got COVID and are asymptomatic. This is without vaccinations, have zero symptoms. So I'm sorry, but someone getting a mild case of COVID is not really proof of anything. Again, I'm not even rejecting the idea that you are likely to get less symptoms if you get it. However, what you said at the beginning is really undeniable, that even if we had 100% vaccination rates in America, that would not have stopped this new mutation, this new variant in India from going to India to the UK to over here, or whatever the exact path was. I believe that's what they think. And according to the recent studies, they're saying that you can get and spread it as easily as unvaccinated people. So it's just this idea of pointing at the unvaccinated people is complete bullshit. And this is something that's really, what's so interesting, I know we talked about this on the last episode too, and I know we talk about this a lot, but this is like the most important shit in the world going on right now. So, you know, got to focus on what's really happening in people's lives. It's like, they say these things, like I was saying on the last episode, that it's like, okay, but if this is true, then this can't be true. Like, you have to be able to bring these things into harmony. And so if Fauci is going to say that, look, like, let me take him at his word here and say, let's say the science does back this up, which I'm not completely sure it does, but I think that it is possible. If he's saying, look, taking the vaccine will make you get less sick, less likely to be hospitalized, less likely to die. Let's say that that is the reality of the situation. You're probably not going to be hospitalized or die if you get the vaccine. You will get less sick than you otherwise would have, but you're just as likely to spread it to anybody else if you're vaccinated. Okay. If you're claiming that, okay, that can be true. But if that is true, then all of this stuff that Sarah Silverman said, all of the like scapegoating the unvaccinated, now has to completely fall by the wayside. Because that's only has to do with a risk to themselves now. It does nothing to it does nothing to mitigate the risk toward others. So I'm sorry, but at this point, you don't get to make this claim anymore. You can't, but like it's one or the other. Or make an argument that the CDC is wrong about this and Fauci is wrong about this and you are more likely to spread it. Okay, but like, I'm sorry, it's like you can't have these like contradictory views, these wild inconsistencies, and try to convince anyone who cares about logical consistency or accuracy.
There's another part of it that annoys me, which is I thought at the origin of the vaccines, it was, hey, like you get the vaccine and you'll be, it's going to be safe and effective and you'll be protected from the virus. Now, the new selling point of the vaccines is that, no, we need 100% compliance from everybody, because unless everybody's willing to get this thing, the virus will continue to spread and mutate, and the vaccines actually aren't good enough for the mutations. All right. So first is, like I pointed out, we're not getting the entire world vaccinated. So in other words, by their own admission, so unless you're locking down the borders, I guess we got a losing strategy of giving vaccines that we know are not going to work from two or three mutations from now. I guess if you're looking at the numbers of abroad, that's one. Two is, so then what you're really saying is, hey guys, we've got this new vaccine, right? And we're going to put it out to the market. The only way that this thing is going to work is if at least 90% of you guys are into it. You kind of have to put it up to a vote of, hey, how many of you guys want to trust this vaccine, right? That did not have its trial data. How many of you guys want to take the risk of that versus the risk of COVID? That's really a question for everyone to kind of, if you believe in democracy and you want to come to a vote because you think that that's a good system, that's something you should probably put up to everybody. Hey, who wants, let's all make a discussion about risk right now, because this thing's not going to work unless everybody's into it. And there's no reason for us to take it unless everybody's into it. In Sarah Silverman's reality, where she decides that she prefers the risk of taking the vaccine, which is fine, you know, that's fine. You're allowed to make that decision for yourself. But there are other people that are not assessing risk in the same way, especially younger individuals. They're now recommending it for kids under 15, and they do not have the data to support that. From what I'm seeing, I would venture to guess you're more at risk from harm of this vaccine if you're under the age of 15 than you are from getting COVID. And the reason I say that is because they reported 400 deaths in this country. They don't even have total numbers for how many kids got sick. The 400 deaths that occurred, they can't tell you whether or not they were for pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. And now they've got numbers that one in every 1,000 kids who are getting the vaccine are having an adverse event. And this is according to VAERS, that they, by their own CDC admission, VAERS is underreporting 90%, basically 0.09 for every 1,000 kids who are getting the vaccine or having a serious adverse effect, according to the VAERS system that they know underreports, against a death number that we know is inaccurate. And they're making the recommendation for those kids. And we have no idea what the long-term health effects are going to be. You got to remember that. You're putting risk on your plate of no idea. So if you're a kid, you've got another 80 years to live. Sarah, I don't know how much to live. She's 45, 50, you know what I mean? So you're an adult. Yeah. You lived a life.
And right. And then for the people who would argue about like long COVID and like long-term effects of COVID, which we don't know as well, but it seems that kids are not getting very sick with this, and those are the people who really have, you know, like the people who like get very sick with COVID, get pneumonia in the wake of COVID, have lung damage, like that can have permanent effects, but it seems very unlikely that that's happening with kids. So it's, again, I'm with you. It's like people have to make their own decisions.
But it's unfair to turn to the community that assesses risk differently than you and go, how dare you not make the same assessment as me? And we're all in this together. And so you have to, like, this is it. No, it's a personal, like, you're demanding that everyone has the same exact outlook as you, which is not the way the planet works. You don't get to decide.
And you, someone like you, right, who just got it.
Yeah, you'd have to be retarded to get the vaccine now.
Yeah, and right. And so you made your own risk assessment as to whether to get it or not. You realized there was a risk to getting it. You got it. But you also realized in that the overwhelming odds were that, yeah, you'd be sick for a few days and then be fine. And now you have natural immunity to it. I mean, I don't know. Like, how are people not allowed to make that decision?
And by the way,
themselves?
In the death
why
numbers,
does that make you evil, the person to be scapegoated? You're the reason why we have to mask up and everything. It's like, no, actually, you're fucking, the crazy government is the reason why you have to mask up everywhere you go. It has nothing to do with fucking people like me and you.
And the death numbers are, in my opinion, have to be inaccurate, the COVID death numbers, because you can't look at the numbers from 3-4 months ago, because now we can treat you with the monoclonal antibodies that Donald Trump got, which is, if before you get a cough, you have a positive test and you go get them, I believe that they're very effective. So that's an education problem that not enough people know that they should be testing at first symptoms. There also is not good studies. I won't even say the word, but I took myself some good ivory substances that even Wall Street Journal is now reporting on. Why won't the FDA take a look into this? You guys should all go look up that article. It was an opinion piece, but is that a tool that is actually working? And is it something that if people are taking early, preventing death? And so the death numbers
if
that we were
taken early, which is, yes, I think the key there is that, you know, there's people there who think like once you're on your deathbed, you could start taking the drug who will not be named. And it's
no, you need first symptom. I think you need first symptom, because from what I understand, it helps reduce the virus replicating within your body. But once it's kind of, from what I understand, I'm really not a doctor, and I'm over talking my educational degree on all of these topics. Except I am an expert in spotting when people are lying and just ignoring and making up science. And This new piece of propaganda that we, the unvaccinated, are responsible for the mutations makes no sense to me. I'll just say one last thing on that. How is it not a diversification of immunity? So like if I go out and I get myself natural immunity and you've got these mRNA vaccines that are probably not as good for the next round of whatever the duplication is. So wouldn't you want diverse immunity in terms of trying to keep people from getting like whatever the mutations are? Now, I'm not a scientist. I could be 100% wrong on that.
No, it's possible. But there are some scientific studies that seem to back that up. So I don't know, you know, if that's right, but it certainly does seem to be possible. It's funny, though, just to watch, right? Like, you watch all of the government policies fail. Then you watch this vaccine that they're pushing not do what they claimed it would do. And I mean, according to them, I'm not adding anything into this. I'm just saying that literally they were telling you a few weeks ago that if you're vaccinated, you don't need to be masked. And now they're saying if you're vaccinated, you need to be masked again, right? So all of this stuff.
And unless everyone else gets vaccinated, you're still screwed. That's a new claim.
Yes. And they can say that, well, the data changed, and so we changed our point of view. Like, fine. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what you were projecting by that old data, it turned out to be wrong. So the government policies have failed. The vaccines have not done what they said they would do. And now you turn around and you go, okay, you know whose fault it is? It's the people who were against this whole thing to begin with. Those are the people who get scapegoated. All right, let's keep going with Sarah Silverman.
But because they're not getting vaccinated, all these mutations are happening, the variants are happening, and people that are vaccinated are now getting sick with the Delta variant, but they're not dying and they're not going to the hospital, thank God, and that's the point. Good grief. All of this because unvaccinated people will not do this very easy call to action for their country to do this for others. You know, tie a little string around your finger to remind you that others exist.
Yeah, so let's pause it again right there. It's really unbelievable that she could put this out when even the CDC and Fauci are saying that it does nothing for others with this Delta variant, the one she's talking about. And this is, I'll tell you, man, like this is the key to how evil like persists on a large level. And I don't mean to be like equating Sarah Silverman with all the evil people who have ever existed. There's been way more evil people than her. You know, I'm not like saying that, I'm not equating all of them. But this tendency is exactly what they all revolve around. This tendency to pick a scapegoated group, then to say that they're the reason for everything that's wrong, and then to convince yourself that they are almost like less than human. I mean, they have no empathy. Like, it's not you as you're scapegoating a group. You're not the one who has no empathy for them. No. They're the ones who have no empathy for you because they just won't do this simple little thing for other people. It's so patronizing. Tie a little string around you to remind yourself that other people matter. Like, yeah, but according to your own experts who are telling you to get this vaccine, they're telling you this does nothing for other people. That, right? Like, this is not, none of this is scientifically sound. And to say it's like, again, it's just this whole thing. It's like, so I'm sitting, as I'm watching these lockdowns just destroy tens of millions of people's lives, and I'm like, don't you guys care about this? But all these millionaires like Sarah Silverman are like, we're all in this together and we got to do this. So that empathy doesn't matter. But now, all of a sudden, when the official word is you have to get vaccinated, now all those people don't care about others. I mean, like, you gotta, when you start taking one group of people and blaming them for all the problems and insisting that you are morally superior to all of them, you gotta really be careful step by step that you're not maybe falling into the same evil thing, that like the same evil impulse that you think you're fighting against.
Another point on that, if these people are so 100% sure that this vaccine is safe and effective and everybody getting it will be the thing to save society, why not some sort of an insurance product that will put the financial liability on these individuals if they turn out to be wrong? Like, if I'm at a company and you guys are 100% sure that this is safe and effective and you're telling me I have to get the vaccine, if you feel it's safe and effective, I want a document that says that if there turns out to be health ramifications from this vaccine 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, you're covering the medical costs. I have Alzheimer's. You're paying for my treat. I'm saying, hey, I think it's risky. You're saying it's 100% risk free. Then why not take the financial liability? You think it's totally 100% not a problem. And obviously no one's going to do that. including the companies putting out these vaccines, who said if there's a problem, we can't afford to put these products out unless we are. And by the way, they're really good at assessing risks. The companies that won't take on the financial risk of health ramifications down the road.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. That's a very good point. All right, let's keep playing.
That you have fellow Americans out there. That there are children. You know, because of them, there's no herd immunity. And therefore, the variants. Please don't wait for some variant to come that kills our children. Please. I'm so afraid
because,
of this.
Can you pause for a sec? Because we have a ton of evidence of variants becoming more deadly, and we've got a lot of evidence of how harmful the current version of the virus has been to kids. So this is a very scientifically researched plea to save our kids from Sarah Silverman.
Just pure fear mongering. Like, I mean, I'm not saying you can't be scared of that. I mean, yeah, it's a scary thought, right? That a variant would come that's killing children. There's just simply no scientific reason to think that that's going to happen. Now, of course, that would be horrible if it happens. Again, we could get 100% vaccinated and that wouldn't stop this possibility from happening.
Anything could still happen.
Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, but to just invoke that as this is your plea to people, please go get this vaccine because I'm scared of some hypothetical that I have no evidence to believe is going to happen. That's not that good of a plea. It's funny to watch these kind of like Hollywood progressive types talk about like, how don't you have empathy for your like fellow Americans? It's pretty ironic for them to say this and not feel any sense. It's like, oh, you mean like the people who literally just lined up to buy your movies for decades and decades and allowed you to basically be the dominant force in their culture. And then you turned around and told them they were all a bunch of racist Nazis. For a decade? How come they, like, now you're asking for them to have more empathy for you? It's like, I don't know. There's a real lack of self-awareness there, just beyond the whole even, like, COVID vaccine type thing. It'd be like when CNN would be saying, like, why do these people love Trump so much? I'm like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you hate them, and he doesn't, at least doesn't seem to.
I'm going to do a little bit of research on this one because I'm not so sure for Pfizer and Moderna. I know that Pfizer just lost Chantix off the market because it was causing some health problems. I'm curious to know how many products these companies have put out that 10 years later had to be taken from the market because there were health ramifications affiliated with it. And that's after FDA approval. And speaking to that point, on the same week, last week, when they were talking about Johnson & Johnson, safe and effective, they're talking about bankruptcy for baby powder because it caused cancer, which, I mean, I can't imagine they were saying that baby powder was cancerous for the 100 years they were selling it. They were calling it baby powder. And then on the same note, they were part of the largest corporate fine in American history for their involvement in the opioid epidemic. Who are you telling us to trust? Like, exactly who, like, go look at these agencies. Why are we trusting these like these are the same big pharma companies that a year ago we were all like, fuck big pharma and fuck their profits. And all of a sudden we love these companies.
Yeah. The message of a true progressive in Sarah Silverman, may just trust these big pharmaceutical companies. All right, let's keep playing.
I'm so afraid of this. People are so goddamn motherfucking selfish. Shit has to come right to their front door, right to their door. For them to give a fucking two shits, excuse my language, too many swears. But did you see that story about the nurse in Alabama? And she was like, you know, all these unvaccinated people are getting hospitalized with COVID. And the nurses and the doctors initially felt very little sympathy for them. But when you are with them and you're caring for them and you see how scared they are and that they're going to die. And that this wasn't, you know, I just said they were selfish. It's not that, she said, you know, it's misinformation. There's so much misinformation out there.
Well, I'm so happy that I can provide that misinformation to people and keep them from getting experimental vaccines. That if you want to just trust the scientists, you just want to trust the organizations, they're pushing that your kids should be getting. And I think the evidence for kids Zero. Come on the show or come on Run Your Mouth. Hit me up. Make the argument why you'd be vaccinating kids. Even the CDC, they're like, well, it's for everyone else. Well, why are we putting kids in harm's way? You heard Sarah. We care about kids, don't we?
I just find it like so, I don't know. It's very bizarre for her to be like telling this story of a nurse who was like, I have no sympathy for these people. But then as she was treating them, like she really did feel bad. It's like, okay. Like the idea that a nurse is even has the mentality of like, this is your own fault when you get like somebody gets real sick with a virus. It's like, yeah, they're right. Like I'd
assume. That's the lung cancer ward. That's the entire heart ward. Well, they're like, fuck you, fatty.
There's something like, I mean, if you looked at the CDC's numbers, it's something, I haven't read this in a while, but it's somewhere in the ballpark of 70% of all like medical costs are associated with preventable illness. So forget about this, whether someone got vaccinated or not, you know, which again, doesn't even ensure that this is preventable because there are people hospitalized with who are vaccinated. But there's people, right? I mean, there's a ton of people who like ate the wrong way, lived the wrong way, smoked the wrong way, like all these things that end up in the hospital. And like, yeah, like what is the role of some nurse when someone comes in with like lung cancer and you're like, you shouldn't have smoked, dummy. Like, get your own meds. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's a human being who's like, it's like gasping for breath. I assume you'd have some empathy for them. But then she just goes out and contradicts her entire thing, realizes mid-sentence that she's contradicted her entire point. It's like, oh, it's not actually selfishness. It's misinformation. Like, all right. But the issue you have here is like, okay, there's a couple. Number one, you can't just assert something is misinformation and your information is good information. You actually have to like argue that and demonstrate why your information is superior to this misinformation, as you're calling it. And look, the truth is this, right? Here's how I look at it. And I've said this for years. It's not just true with COVID, but it's true with COVID in general. You have the like establishment kind of old monopoly that's lost its grip on information, right? Like what was the three networks and the big major newspapers and the political class and all of that, right? And academia and all of that. Now with the internet, it's like fragmented and there's like so much information out there. You can get all types of different perspectives that you never would have gotten with just the three channels and the New York Times and, you know, stuff like that. And there is misinformation and some accurate information in all of them. But the truth is that in overwhelmingly what's been broadcast on through the corporate press throughout COVID has been misinformation. Now, what's broadcasted, for lack of a better word, on the internet and social media and stuff like that is also a ton of misinformation. But then there's also some good information out there. And you got to kind of search for it to find it out and find the really reliable people and dismiss the ones that are bullshit. There certainly is a lot of COVID misinformation online. And I'd be the first to admit, right, that like even in our private Facebook group that got banned, right? We got banned for COVID misinformation, in quotes. And I'm sure there was some. Like, I'm sure there was. People were sharing articles from all different people with all different views, and I'm sure some of it was wrong. But some of it also turned out to be right, you know? And so this is the tricky part about this game, right? Is that you can say, oh, there's all this misinformation out there, but there's also some shit that's correct. And then there's also a lot of misinformation that's coming out of what Sarah Silverman would call the real information here, okay? Now, if you think, and I tend to believe this, right, it goes back to that old Tucker Carlson quote that I really loved, which I think is completely consistent with like anarcho-capitalist values. But the idea that he said, I'm not a populist. I'm an elitist. I believe in elites. I just believe in impressive elites, right? So I think as a libertarian, you certainly recognize that people, there is specialization and the division of labor, and these things are absolutely necessary to have any level of prosperity or just a civilization at all. You know, if everybody's doing the same job and nobody has any specialized, specialization, any like specific knowledge, then you're at best living in like a hunter-gatherer society, where people are dying, you know, in their teenage years because they got a fucking splinter and it got infected. You know, like that's bad. So what ends up happening are these natural hierarchies where you have people who become experts in different fields. And those things are really, really necessary, right? Like in the same way that Scott Horton is a really brilliant guy and Bob Murphy is a really brilliant guy. But Bob knows a lot more about economics. Scott knows a lot more about foreign policy. And they would both completely admit that. And if Scott has a question about economics, he's likely to give Bob Murphy a call, talk to him for a few minutes and get the real information and vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, because they specialize in different things. And so you have all of this, and it's natural that in an advanced society, you would have these respected experts who people would look to and trust. We do this every day. I mean, we could not get through our day if we did not trust what some other people who know a whole lot of shit about stuff that we don't know, right? So I understand in theory, I mean, not in this awful status corporate model, but in theory, I understand making the argument like you really need people to trust kind of the official information, the information from the real experts, right? So if you're upset, and I tweeted something up about this earlier, if you're upset with the fact that this misinformation is, as you call it, is being spread, or if you're upset, if you think it's a real threat that there is this vaccine hesitancy amongst a lot of people, you know what you might want to look at? The fact that the establishment, both the medical establishment, the political establishment, and the media establishment have completely discredited themselves over the last 16 months. Completely discredited themselves. This is why people are so eager and willing to trust what other voices are saying. And oftentimes they do trust people who are like, that guy's lying to you too. But so much of it is because the establishment has completely discredited itself throughout this entire COVID regime. It's the same reason why, why do you think 9/11 truth, 9/11 was an inside job shit became so popular during George W. Bush? It was because George W. Bush was transparently corrupt and incompetent. And when you see that, you're kind of like, well, I wouldn't put anything past him. I mean, and then people who are calling him out, you're more likely to view them. Whereas if your leader was a transparently honest, competent person, people would be much less likely to believe some wild conspiracies about what's going on here. So I'm just pointing that out. I think it's an important thing that progressives like Sarah Silverman should consider, that maybe the fact that Fauci has lied through his teeth about so many different issues, that he is flip-flopped on his stance on almost everything, and that he's gotten so many things just blatantly wrong, maybe that is a big part of why people will believe alternative voices that you think are so scary. Just a thought. All right, we're going to wrap up the show there. Come see us, DC, Rochester. Robbie the Fire Bernstein will be in Nashville. Come check it out. Go listen to Run Your Mouth. Follow Rob on Twitter, @RobbieTheFire. See you guys next time. Peace.